Hello, Fred.
Yes.
Good morning. It's Barry Rudell.
Yes, Barry.
How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you.
Good, good. Thank you for your time and joining me and us in the library here at the synagogue is Johnstown Area Heritage Association curator Andrew Lang.
Good morning, Mr. Glasser.
And Larissa Duncan from Cambria County Library Systems.
Hello, Mr. Glasser.
Good morning. Pleasure to meet you on the telephone.
And also joining us is Anna
Gagne,
who's a high school student where this oral history project is also a part of her Girl Scout project. Good. Well, we appreciate your involvement, and I've mentioned to the group here how involved you were in Johnstown's business community and the cultural community and in Johnstown's Jewish community, taking a real lead with Israel Bonds and a number of things. But, Andrew, why don't you take the lead, if you would, please?
Thank you, Barry. So, Mr. Gloss, we just have a series of questions here related to... you know, it's exploring individuals' lives and their lives in Johnstown. So I think we'll just start right out. So did you grow up in Johnstown, sir?
Yes, I did. I was born and raised. I was born downtown on Sherman Street without the aid of a doctor. My dad came home for lunch my mother had me, and I was in bed with her. And he called a doctor and he came and said, got the umbilical cord and cleaned me up.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I was born.
All right. And how did your family come to Johnstown? I think it's a fairly well-known story, actually, but we'd like to hear your take on it as well.
Well, my grandfather came over here first with his oldest son, Nathan,
mm-hmm.
and they were tailors in Poland, and they opened up a tailor shop in Johnstown. The reason they came to Johnstown because his older brother was here before him.
Right. Right.
Yes, yes. The group has access to it, and there's a copy in the library.
Well, we'll certainly consult that for sure. We like to hear your take on it too, though, Fred. I think you can provide some good insight there.
And kid. We tried to chop the front porch down.
Oh.
They removed the furniture in.
Okay.
But anyway, we got all moved in, and that's where we were raised until I was about 5 or 6 years old. And my dad bought a farm in Crescent. I guess he wanted to keep busy and I out of trouble. If he had a farm, he'd keep us busy all summer when we weren't in school. So we moved into the farm in Crescent. We'd spend the summer months up there on the farm. And then when school started, we'd move back into town.
Fred, how long did you guys have that farm? I understand that members of the Jewish community used to come up there and recreate. Information is rich. I don't think I've heard a lot about the farm. Where was it located, Fred?
It was located between Munster and Crescent on Route 22.
Okay, thank you.
It was closer to Crescent, but about 1.5 miles from Crescent.
That's great.
Crescent was a little town, a deserted town. Very, very few people lived there. We had the farm, it was during the Depression. People didn't have any money, didn't have any jobs, and one time we had an early frost, and the frost came and ruined the cabbage plants on the outer side. You couldn't sell them. So my dad went into Crescent, and he met a couple men there that were desperate for food. He said, if you come out to the farm, you can have all the cabbage you want, and you can make coleslaw, or not coleslaw, but the sauerkraut. I still have a letter from one of the people that she was a child then, but then she was an adult when she wrote me the letter. I still have the letter thanking them for what my dad did. They gave me all this cabbage, and all the families that participated that wanted the cabbage, they came out and cut cabbage, and they made sauerkraut with a big barrels of sauerkraut, and that's what they ate, sauerkraut for, I guess, bread or whatever else I could get, potatoes. And that's what he did with all the cabbage. It couldn't be sold.
Mm.
He just kind of ate it. But my dad was a very generous man, very kind.
Yes. And I was, I want to talk a bit more about him in a sec, too. I just wanted to follow up a bit on the one further question with the farm. How long did your family own the farm up there in Crescent? Okay. Well, after the war, I think, then.
We had the farm in town. That was about 1980.
Okay. So a pretty good long while. Yeah. Good long while. I used to walk from Southmont, where I lived on State Street, up over the mountain through West Swanton and down the big hill to the store just to see my daddy. And I'd go up on the balcony on the first floor and look out over the floor and look for a bald head, and that would be my daddy. I'd run over to him, and he'd ask me how I get down there. And I'd tell him I walked down. I didn't go to school yet. And he'd take me by the hand in the barber shop next door and wash my face because I'm always dirty. and take me to the store and say, all right, now you have to go to work. And he'd pick up all the paper and all the boxes on the floor, take them over and flip down the chute. And the men downstairs had a baler, a paper baler, and they would bale the paper. And I would do that, and then after I picked up all the papers on the floor, he said, now you go pick up all the shopping baskets that are on the floor that people used to buy groceries down in the basement and carry them up the stairs to the first floor to go out to the cash registers. In those days, people didn't have buggies. We didn't have buggies. We just had these wooden baskets. And they would shop their groceries and bring them upstairs and check out. And then they'd go home, bring their bags, and go home. But the baskets would stay upstairs, and they didn't take them back downstairs. So my job was to tear the baskets and take them back downstairs. He kept me busy. Any time he wouldn't let me sit around. And then I was so small, I would go down the basement. I'd take the baskets out. My young men down there would pick me up and put me in the baler and tell me to jump up and down to press the paper. And then take me out of the baler, and then they would bale the paper. And that's where I grew up in the store. I did everything. And then I would do everything they asked me to do. And we had a wonderful man, a maintenance man. He used to take me around the store. And I used to help him when I could. Change light bulbs, fix different things, do different things, anything they asked me to do, he would do it, I would help. And I grew up in the Army, I started doing that, and driving truck, do everything. And then eventually I got married, and I gave me a department to run, the notions department. Because the buyer for the notions
shop for a few years while I first got married, and then the buyer for the infants and children's department retired, and I took that job, and I had that job for a good many years while my kids were growing up, after a while, they, I guess, I forget what year it was, 1967, I guess, 68, they started opening up the TV stores.
Mm.
Nobody in the store knew anything about construction, and I did, because when I lived on a farm, I helped the guys build barns and stuff like that, and I knew about some construction. And I worked with a maintenance man in the store, and I knew a lot of electrical work and building, and then I went to night school to learn how to do blueprinting and blueprint drafting and read blueprints and also drafting. And I worked with the architects and the engineers, the electrical engineers and so forth over Frank Pastorello was the developer for our stores for many years. And I worked with him and his men. Responsible for all the construction of all the stores that we had, all the department stores and supermarkets, and the construction of the buildings. And then the department store part, not the supermarket, Paul Glosser took care of the location of the machines and stuff in the supermarket. And I worked with the department store side, make sure that all the plans were exactly right, because if the plans were wrong, and they ordered the steel, and they had to change it so the columns and so forth would match all our layouts for all the furniture and all the fixtures and stuff, and the electrical outlets in the floor, we would have to pay for all the changes, the steel, the construction, and everything. But all the years that I was there, I had to work with their draftsmen and everything, make sure everything was done right, and I had to check the plans. They usually gave me about 24 hours to check the plans and read the books that described all and everything that went into the building. And those pages were about 400 or 500 pages long. I had to go over every one of those and go over every plan, check all the measurements, make sure everything was drawn exactly right. And then once I signed it, we were responsible. But we never had one problem. Of all the stores and all the plans that I checked, that I had to do, everything was perfect. Never had a mistake.
And you were the one guy in the family who was kind of skilled in those operations, right?
I was the only guy. So that's why I had that job. I had in charge of all the warehouses and the layouts of the warehouses for the storage and all the tractors and trailers. We had about 8 tractors and trailers, and we had about maybe 16 trailers and about 8 tractors. And I was responsible for the maintenance and all them, make sure that the tires and the machine and tractors were working fine, and pass them all inspections and so forth. We had 2 big warehouses, one out in Windsor, and we had one up in Geistown.
So Fred, I mean, in terms of your career, you got to see a lot with Glosser Brothers, and I was hoping you could talk a little bit about Glosser's importance to the Johnstown community and the Jewish community. What did the store mean in terms of its connection to people there?
Check. They got paid every other week, and they would come in the store checks and give them their money right away, no problems. They appreciated that. We appreciated their business because that's the reason. That's one of the reasons Colossus cashed their checks right away, rather than having to try to go to the bank. We had difficulty sometimes. This way, they got their money. And during the depression, when the banks were closed, Colossus Brothers made their own money. We had what we called script. They would come in the store, and we would give them script for money, and they would spend their script, the money that we gave them in the store.
Mm-hmm.
You could only spend it in the store. No other store would take step for a script.
Right.
And then they didn't have to pay for it, and if they ever got their money, they went back to work.
Right.
Community in general, there wasn't a good cause in town, whether it was building the war memorial or making significant gifts to the hospital or to the YMCA. The Glossers wasn't involved. How did the community come to you guys, and how did you decide on where to spread some of that giving? Actually, and I don't know if Andrew and Larissa and Anna know this, but your own branch of your family has some very deep history with Israel, and how did that work in with the UJA in giving?
Empire controlled do. They could have enlisted in the American Army, and they could enlist in the British Army in the United States.
Mm.
They had to go to Canada to do it. He went up there, and then he was shipped over there, and that's where he served in the British Army, the Royal Fusiliers, the Jewish Legion. And if you go to Israel, there's a little town, Tikanya, north of
you talking about the kibbutz, the Ganya, Aleph, and Bet?
The Ganya, yeah. The Ganya, there's a museum there dedicated to the Jewish Legion from World War One, and there you see my dad's picture, my mother's picture in there. And he was in the Jewish Legion. He went in while he was over there, and he served in the Jewish Legion, and he met my mother over there, and they got married over there. And they stayed there. My sister was born there in 1921.
And did your dad keep up with Ben-Gurion over the years?
Oh, yeah. He was, well, after the War of Independence, he didn't go back. He went back. We went back when I was 6 months old. We went back again. Well, he was there until my sister was born. They were there until my sister was born, and she was just a few months old, and they couldn't find any work, and they couldn't make a living there. And I have a picture of them standing in front of the shack they lived in. It looked like an outhouse. But anyway, they came back to the States. He went to work for my grandfather and his brothers. And then my brother Izzy was born, and then I was born 2 years after Izzy. And then he decided to go back again. I guess my grandmother wanted to see us, my mom's mother. And we went back, and we were there for, I guess, about 6 months. He still couldn't find work. Still desolate. Absolutely nothing there. Absolutely nothing. You can't imagine what it was like. But I was only 6 months old when I was there. And that was 95 years ago. But anyway, they were there for a while, and then they came back, and that's when they went back to work for Glosser Brothers. And they gave them a job, and that's... They had the whole first floor of the building that where Glosser Brothers is, and they took over the whole building. And then after a while, it wasn't big enough. They built that other addition to it. It's the white part of the building on Locust Street. That white part is the second addition. There was another little addition made in the back where the freight elevator is, where it used to be anyway. Well, it's still there, I guess. And,
So, Fred, as the company expanded over those next few years, it still did your father and the company still maintain this involvement with Israel in terms of outreach?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, my dad was friends when after the 67 war, and after the 48 war, my dad went back. And he met Ben Gurion, he met all his friends, and Ben Tzvi. Ben Tzvi was the first president of Israel, I think, or the second. He was a pen buddy of Ben Tzvi during the war. And he was a pen buddy of his, and he knew a lot of people over there. And then we had a lot of relatives there. My mother's whole family was there. Not the whole family, but a couple of her brothers left because they didn't want to join the Russian army, or the Turkish army, rather than the Turkish army. They didn't want to join that because once you were in that, you were there for life. You didn't, you couldn't get out, and you died there. But my dad knew. We had lots of relatives. We still have a lot of relatives. I have so many relatives. I think I have more over there than I have here. But I used to go over there every year. I went over there twice in 1 year. With the EJA and Israel Bonds. We had wonderful times when we went to Israel. Great country. Well, you've been there, haven't you?
Well, I've been there 17 times.
Oh, wonderful. You've been there about as many times as I've been there then.
Yeah. And, you know, I'll tell the group here that Johnstown, because of your family and other people here in Johnstown, was always a calling card in Israel and in New York in fundraising circles, because Johnstown was just outstanding because of the Glosser family and the deep connection that they had with Israel, no question.
Mm. But we moved down here to Austin. We were surprised. Johnstown raised more money than the city of Austin. The city of Austin had 10 times as many people, Jewish people. And Johnstown raised more money than the whole city of Austin. And they never sold bonds here. They didn't even have a bond office here. When we moved down here, they didn't even have a bond office. And Betty called up to find out why they didn't have a bond office. I said, well, it doesn't pay us to have a bond office here, because to sell one bond for $500, or two bonds maybe they would sell, didn't pay to have an office here. So if you wanted to buy a bond, you had to do it through Houston.
Mm.
And they weren't very connected to Israel or for themselves, even for the United Jewish Appeal. And but then after a while, now it's become very big. We are right now in the process of going to raise $25 million to build a big addition to our Jewish center. We have a beautiful Jewish campus down here. Michael Bell bought this big 30 acres of ground right not too far from where we used to live. And he donated it to the community, the Jewish community. But they had to build we built a new synagogue, a conservative synagogue on it. And they built a temple, a Reformed temple on it. And we built a beautiful center with a gymnasium, a swimming pool, and classrooms. And they have a Jewish, a Hebrew school there. Jewish school for up to 8th grade, and it's very highly rated. And right now we're having another campaign. We're going to double the size of the Jewish Center, because it's not big enough now to handle the number of people. We have over 1,000 Jews living here now, and it's really growing. And it's growing every day. About 100 Jewish families move in here. I think it was about every month they come in here. IBM moved their office, one of their offices from Florida here to Austin, and the Jewish families from down there were religious. They would come because they didn't have a kosher market. And so HEB has a big supermarket chain, and they put in a kosher market right here in Austin, and they have all the Jewish families. Most of them that broke for IBM moved from Florida to Austin, and we have a big, very Orthodox community here now.
Mm.
And they have an Orthodox synagogue now on our campus. It was moved here from a small town, I forget the name of the town, but it was a small town, and all the Jews, there were no more Jews left in that town. So somebody donated that synagogue. It was just a small wooden building. It was big enough for to start the synagogue with. And they moved that synagogue to this campus and they put it back together again. They cut it up pieces and they assembled it back up with it. And they did a beautiful job of moving it. And then we have an Orthodox synagogue on the campus, and a conservative and a reform. And the Jewish center, the JCC, we call it, Jewish Community Center. They changed the name now. Now they're going to call it Shalom Austin.
I mean, it's amazing to consider, Fred, you know, what your campus in Austin has been able to accomplish. And, you know, it's interesting that, you know, the role that you've played in the Jewish community in Austin, on top of the role that the Glosser family played and it continues to play in Johnstown. So it's a kind of just a further way that the Glosser family's legacy is spread. One other question that I wanted to ask was, obviously the Glosser family has had a long involvement in the Jewish community in Johnstown, and by extension, so did you. What changes did you see to the Jewish community over time in Johnstown, from when the Glossers first came here to, you know, your later years in the community?
Tremendous guy. And you were just on. You were Fred was just honored by the Community Arts Center this last year.
Yeah,
I saw that.
Why don't we finish up with one story? Do I understand you were involved with the Menacher Heights Swim Club?
Yes, my brother started that. Izzy Glosser started that, and I was involved in that. And Herb Sinberg also. We bought that and started. And we paid for building that. And my brother Izzy managed it part time, and he had a full time manager, but he supervised it, and I would help him. Whenever he was busy or he couldn't handle it, I helped him manage that. We had a swim club and tennis courts there. And the boys there were, they had a swim team also. Mark Glosser, Izzy, Izzy, my brother Izzy's winners.
By the way, Fred, what was the motivation for the club? Was it that that you guys couldn't go to Sunny Hanna, or you just wanted to start your own thing? Hey, anything else you want to add, Fred? Did a great job and on his, I think it was his master's work in college.
Yeah.
And it's sitting up. We're looking.
Larry.
He's well, he's a little bit older, but we have his copy. And as you know, Leonard Winograd kind of worked with Larry in some way on that. And Leonard wrote his own book, and then Iwo Morawska worked on her monograph. Well, Fred. Oh yeah, we have him featured in some of our history, and well, thank you so much, Fred, for being involved with the History Project and the oral histories.
Thank you for calling me and taking the time to hear what I have to say. I don't have that much to say. I have still lots of stories, but I'm sure you're not interested in hearing all those stories.
Well, we are at another time for sure.
Most of the guys that you fought with ended up on the short end.
Well, they did, because I never lost a fight. There was only one fight I couldn't handle. The other kid was, I couldn't even reach him. He was so much bigger than me. But my brother took care of him. He was 6'3", when he was 13.
Izzy was a wonderful guy, and thank you, and love to Betty. Have a healthy year.
Okay. Yes.
Right, thank you, and same to you and your fellow there helping with this interview.
Yes. It was. Yes, very nice to meet you over the phone, Mr. Glosser.
Thank you, Mr. Glosser.
Thank you. Be well. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.